As well. We are expecting, and I'm asking the committee secretary or one of them to call Honourable Anton Elberts, who specifically asked to be here early because it's his birthday, and he so that he could then leave earlier. And I don't know if the birthday discussion has stretched a bit from his breakfast. So in that light, I am sorry because he actually wanted to be here. That's why I'm asking, Mr. Hermans, are you going to call him? Yes. And then we do have yourself, Dean, which is the Honourable MacPherson is here. So we've got the Honourable Mkongi, the Honourable Whip, Honourable Tsopo, myself, and the Honourable MacPherson. That's what I said, yeah. And another member of the DA is on study leave, if I'm, is that correct? So we are what's called a core group, and we are expecting Honourable Elberts. Now, the manufacturing circle is a very critical one that we, and we do, we're not delaying you out of existence, but is it Fidusa? Where are they? Where? You're there, are you? Well, you indicated certain challenges to me as we are already starting a bit late. Just come to the fore here and present. Just here. Is there, that a spare seat? Yeah. Okay. And we don't want them sitting here. Yeah. Yeah, I want them now. Where is it? Well, that's fine. All right, this is going to be a very short verbal overhead presentation, and we will get the hard copies tomorrow or Thursday. Is that correct? Yes, but I'm saying hard copies. Yes. Yeah, but his surname. I mean, we don't want to call you Dennis. This is an official meeting. What's your... Your surname? Dennis George. Okay, right, okay. No, so that's a problem when you're just on first name terms. All right, are you all geared up?
Thank you, Chairperson, in the attempt to save time. I'm going to start, and then when the technology is ready, then we'll just switch over. Chairperson, first of all, thank you for the opportunity. I also wanted to specifically mention one of the senior parliamentarians, his birthday today, Mangosuthu Buthelezi, I think he's 80, I can't say his age in front of everybody, but it's his birthday, so congratulations to him too. Chairperson, you know that arrangements between Parliament and NEDLAC is sort of regulated according to the protocol, and the key person between government and the social partners in NEDLAC is the Deputy President. During the State of the Nation address, the President did indicate in his State of the Nation address that he would like request the Deputy President to start with a process to lead the discussion with government inside of NEDLAC regarding the radical transformation of the economy to ensure that we address the constraints in the economy. It's for that reason that we want to say we welcome this discussion here with yourself to learn and understand what is the constraints and what is the bottlenecks. But I think what is critical for us to say, this is only the beginning, and the process will unfold as we move forward. I think what is also, Chairperson, quite critical for us is the issue of exceptional leadership that's going to drive this process. For us, this process have already started in 1994, where the RDP addressed this challenge to say, look, this matter must be addressed, you know, if the Democratic Forces is going to take its course. And there was a lot of policy issues that was not addressed, you know, on a consistent and in a coherent basis. And it's for that reason that we felt that it was quite important for us to be there. I will also, from my side, brief my leadership of Dusa, Kusatu and Natu about the positive developments that's unfolding there, and to say that, you know, from Labour side, we must provide support for this initiative of yourself. I did speak to you off the record yesterday to say that we're going to require some exceptional leadership to drive this process. I think with our colleagues on my left, I don't know why business is sitting on my left today, Chair, the manufacturing circle, we have also reached out to one another to work together on a number of declarations where we were felt it was quite critical for us. But, you know, it is very difficult to discuss these kinds of technical issues in a quite a big audience. And we have learned from our experience with working with the International Labour Organization, with working with the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and with the World Bank and the IMF. It is better that you have one level where you have a committee of experts that will put the documentation together to make an analysis and assessment and to look specifically at what is the specific policy interventions that we want to take the process forward. And it's in that context, Chairperson, that I've just identified a few number of areas where we felt it was going to be critical for us to focus on in terms of the process. I'm not sure, Chairperson, how I'm doing with time. Okay. Because you look like a very strict Chairperson. But I'm glad I'm the first one when business starts and they can feel your strictness afterwards. Chairperson, also what we think is going to be quite important is that this process has to be quite a speedy process, because politicians are normally elected for a very short time, and that is 60 months. And if you look at 60 months, it's 5 years. If you look at 60 months and divide it in quarters, and you know that we received some very negative news yesterday in terms of the GDP growth rate, you know, and it is clearly impossible if we want to address unemployment and poverty and to get demand and the economy moving, that it is quite important that the process that the Deputy President will lead. And we have our NEDLAC summit on the 5th in Johannesburg, and we hope to engage with you too. So we hope to see there's going to be a very bold statement from the social partners to, I know Professor Raymond Parsons normally used to say, if social dialogue was GDP, then South Africa's GDP would most probably be more than 10%. So from our side, Chairperson, we feel that the support for the industrial development, the industrial policy action plan is quite critical. But we want to learn, Chairperson, not only just from having the legislation, because legislation is like the compulsion, but I think what we want to do, Chairperson, is specifically the issue. I just wanted to ask the technical person just to assist me to copy this thing over here for us. In terms of the process, so we will obviously insist that in the statement that we're going to release at NEDLAC to ensure that we incorporate some of these particular points in the statement, number one, as a process for us to building consensus. And then number two, here was yesterday also a number of very well-versed academics, our view is there that there should be some sort of involvement of these academics in the discussion, and we can most probably call them the committee of experts or whatever the process is. But as soon as we have kick-off on that, for us the thing is, in terms of this discussion, should culminate into a social accord between government, business, labor, and the community constituencies to provide support also for the local procurement and what we have said. But Chairperson, let me stop there and then I can maybe be led by you.
So you're just getting what ready? The little overhead? Yeah, because I thought, you see, I didn't see anything up there. Okay, right. Okay, well, that's fine then. So you're going to give it to us as a hard copy only. Am I correct? Pardon me?
I'm saving a few, Chairperson. It's on the stick now.
Oh, how many sticks you got? But okay.
I'm not a Zulu fighter, Chairperson.
No, that's fine. Look, it'll be given to one of the committee secretaries who can deal with the admin side of it and ensure that we get copies. But you see where the challenge is, you're planning on leaving early today, and that becomes a problem in terms of engaging you. So I'm not sure if you're going to be down here another day. Tuesday, Wednesday next week?
I'm going to try my best, Chairperson, but I'm going to stay here till the closure of this session, Chair.
Yeah, well, let's hope you are here for the first discussion, which is at about 10:30.
Thank you.
Thank you. And, we do want to hear from the producers and your colleagues in other organizations because of the role that you do play in this area, and I'm sure the manufacturing circle, Mr. George, is also aware of that as well. But now we've got the first one here, which is the manufacturing circle, which is really a newly created structure. Isn't it about 3 years old, or is it two? It's not a very old structure, is it, Mr. Bezuidenhout?
That's right, Chair. It was created in 2009. Basically in response to a need that some of the manufacturers identified, a core group, to organize themselves across manufacturing categories as a corporate association, so that when there are policy negotiations they go in and discuss with government, that manufacturing is organized in the same way that the mines may be organized and the banks and the retailers. And so put across a more coordinated high-level message. So in that sense, what we do is actually quite different from what the employer organizations do, the industrial development, the industry development associations, and so on. But just by means of introduction, we've got very little time for this presentation, so I'll be quick and the remarks will be high-level. Just by way of introduction, the Manufacturing Circle outlined last year 4 goals that it would like to promote. The first obviously being that it wants to promote a business environment that is attractive to invest for manufacturers. The second, that South Africa will be a gateway manufacturing destination for exports to key markets, and that South African manufacturers will domestically compete on an equal footing with imports. The fourth goal, I'm skipping one, is South African manufactured products will be preferred by South Africans and have an excellent reputation for quality around the world. And then the third one, which I skipped, is that South Africa will be a competitive beneficiator of its own resources, which is obviously where we are at today. So just in terms of the remarks that I want to do in relation to the topic of discussion today, first off is to discuss beneficiation versus manufacturing. Secondly, to do some remarks around high-level interventions that could promote beneficiation. Thirdly, around beneficiation as a manufacturing activity and South African manufacturing conditions, the status quo. Fourthly, around 6 current challenges to manufacturing and the policy changes that they imply. Point 4 specifically is based on research that we do on a quarterly basis. The issues that I will discuss there basically play musical chairs. They come up all the time. It's standing issues which on a constant basis impact on manufacturing confidence. So first off, I see there in the blue line there's a bit of a spelling error. Beneficiation as a peculiar South African term. There's been a little bit of public discussion around that recently. And basically what we want to say there is that a beneficiation is often considered in a way where it's related mostly to mining and mining activity and minerals, and it basically reinforces that idea of mining in South Africa's enclave industry and so on. We believe that there's a very real role for manufacturing to play in that discussion. Firstly, because numerous domestically based manufacturing firms are located both upstream and downstream of the mining value chain. Manufacturing doesn't only is not only supplied by mining, but it also supplies mining with mining, conveying and processing equipment. It is an industry in which we are quite competitive. It is also for this reason that manufacturing suffers doubly when there is instability in the mining sector. When the platinum sector strike happened earlier this year, for instance, 67 million rand of purchases of manufactured goods was lost every day, which is why we are seeing the emerging in terms of growth figures and so on that we are seeing right now. Secondly, manufacturing should also be involved because beneficiation is not only limited to the beneficiation of minerals, but extends also to the beneficiation of other raw materials such as wood, agricultural products, recyclable materials such as scrap and human resources not being scrap, but in addition to scrap. Then, thirdly, manufacturing should also be involved because beneficiation involves value addition and processing, many processes of which are much more common to the activities of manufacturers rather than those of miners, farmers, or other upstream actors. And then fourthly, a beneficiation of recyclable materials and scrap, e.g., as you find in the foundry activity, paper, packaging, and so on, are often more job-intensive and less energy-intensive than the beneficiation of ores and so on. So those are key things to consider. Then just in terms of when we sat a year ago and the manufacturers had an opportunity to think over what it is they think would be able to promote beneficiation domestically. One of the issues that I identified is that we need, and this is obviously because of the role that innovation plays in driving beneficiation, advancing it, is that we need to level the playing field with regards to intellectual property rights. And basically the feeling there is that South Africa's current intellectual property rights regime fails to support the national system of innovation. And it's basically due to South Africa's non-examining approach and lack of an online patent search facility, which makes it harder for local inventors to research new inventions, easier for innovation grants to be wastefully dispersed, and more difficult for local intellectual property to be protected abroad. We noted some solutions which we proposed, that there obviously be an examining approach to granting patents, that be set up in the medium term, but then also some interim steps which could be considered, such as an examining system that an examining system be implemented to bring into line with the world's leading innovation countries. While that is being done, the grant should be directed at facilitating overseas novelty searches and so on to assist local innovators. Also that a website be set up on which the information pertaining to patent applications and the potential benefits can be publicly disclosed. There's a second intervention which the manufacturers identified, the second point there is incorrect. It should read that environmental measures should be made to work for sustainable beneficiation rather than against it. It's in the written document that I supplied. And basically the idea is just there that in terms of innovation, environmental concerns, water licenses, and environmental impact assessments, that we look at major immediate concerns, while measures to put South Africa on a lower carbon trajectory should be made not to create concern over the median term. So they would propose that there be streamlined red tape procedures for EIAs and water licenses, that the playing field between public, private, and private sector projects in respect of water licenses be equalised, so that you don't crowd out private sector investment. And then we also propose that if and when carbon tax becomes imperative for South Africa, that it be implemented only as part of a suite of tools with the requisite equalising measures at the borders. And finally, that mass price zoning of land for industrial usage be considered across the country in our local authorities and so on, because that really does make it much easier for investors to move in and to start with their beneficiation activities. Thirdly, manufacturers also identified the need to promote investment in infrastructure and services that either directly beneficiates or that indirectly promotes investment in beneficiation activities. In this regard, we believe the best approach is to diversify market contestations for things like baseline electricity generation, which we support, obviously, and clear long-term plans with respect to innovations and financial closure deadlines of renewable and nuclear energy procurement programs to ramp up the localization of componentry in particular. Fourthly, manufacturers would like to see that we identify preferential procurement opportunities for locally beneficiated products, very important. Beneficiated products require markets. Establishing a baseload demand that could be created by public procurement could provide significant impetus for investment. Of course, we recognize the need for the private sector to dovetail there. It cannot only be the public sector that buys locally, the private sector must do so too. And in this regard, there's significant work that can be done in terms of studies to identify products that could be targeted specifically where there is transversal buying and so on, that those be leveraged in particular. And then fifthly, and a little bit more controversially, is access to land and raw materials where there's often a lot of politics around. Manufacturers have identified that the availability of land is an essential ingredient for beneficiating our natural resources and therefore also for manufacturing. The manufacturing circle believes access to land would be significantly promoted upon the conclusion of a full-scale audit of land ownership in South Africa, the promotion of access to land for productive beneficiation enterprises through better utilization of share-based schemes, for instance, and also, as mentioned earlier, the mass zoning of land for industrial usage. Then just some remarks around beneficiation as a manufacturing activity. We have seen manufacturing go through quite a tough time in the last year or so, and this is generally ascribed to the instability that we've seen in the labour market. There is some remarks that are going to be done, I believe, by some of my colleagues this morning that will better illustrate these and where the employment reductions are actually happening. But basically what is happening in short is that due to the instability in the labour market, manufacturers need to take certain steps to help them to support their own competitiveness and to make sure that they live to employ for another day. Often this means in this environment of instability that they have to import some of their inputs that they formerly manufactured in South Africa to be able to maintain their supply chains during periods of instability. And basically that means that the managers might maintain their jobs at the end of the day, but the guys that work on the production floor are at risk. It happens particularly in foundries, it happens in some of our steel and engineering industries, and these are not reactionary measures. They are based purely on the fact that if you don't make sure that you are stable and are able to deliver yourself, your competitiveness will disappear. We have warned about this over the last 2 years, that threat of automation and the substitution of local production for imports, that the risk for that would become more and more real as we go along, it's now materializing. We lost 60,000 jobs since the first quarter of this year. We lost 93,000 jobs since the second quarter of last year in manufacturing. And we ascribe this to that particular dynamic. Also, in terms of manufacturing or beneficiation as a manufacturing activity, it's worthwhile to note that South Africa's manufacturing conditions have deteriorated in relative terms if we're related to our trade partners. The PMI, basically what that graph represents, is South Africa is a green dotted line. The other lines are Germany, US and China. Things are going better there. Things are going worse for us. It's going worse for us because of things that we inflict on ourselves. So we need to grasp the nettle. A lot of it's got to do with labor instability, but there are other challenges too. These are not easy things to solve as a single constituency. We need strong government leadership in that regard. Then, while manufacturers expect conditions to stabilize over the medium term, optimism is declining at present. And if I click this button, it emphasizes exactly where it is reflected on that chart. Basically, what you see is the blue bars indicating what the situation is in the second quarter of 2014, showing that those who believe that things will be modest to good and strong in the medium term is much less than they used to be in previous years. And so this is concerning because obviously that will impact on investment decisions going forward. This slide, which is also the last slide, reflects in black on a quarterly basis the issues that manufacturers have basically over the last couple of years identified are particular policy challenges that restrict them from doing better, improving their growth, and will ultimately also impact on their ability to beneficiate more. The first one, so what I've done there is to highlight in black what the challenges that's been identified and the policy implication that has surfaced along with it. The one being labor market stability. Now often when one speaks about labor, it's regarded in a like sort of a fashion of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, that a business wants to come in and just change everything. At least from the manufacturing circle side, it's not the case. The idea is not to dilute the rights of workers, but to come to a system where there is sufficient accountability that we can assure stability over time. Two issues that manufacturers are really asking for very seriously that's needed is auditable strike balloting and zero tolerance enforcement on intimidation and strike violence. Strike violence in particular is something that's hit industry hard over the last 6 months. At the moment, it's organized, it's severe, it inflicts a lot of damage, and it needs to be addressed in a very serious way. Secondly, elevated wages and input costs. Nobody wants a low-wage, low-productivity economy. We want workers to obviously earn wages that makes it possible for them to do a good job on a sustainable basis. But in order to carry those higher wages, we need better demand conditions in South Africa and reined in administered costs, because you need to be able to earn enough, obviously, at the end of the day, to pay those wages. Competition from imported goods, this is an area where we've achieved significant success with customs, with DTI and so on, but there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And it's not about protectionism, but it's about promoting the level playing field and about ensuring that we focus more on procuring locally what we manufacture competitively in South Africa. A low productivity of labor, we believe that the centralized bargaining to promote bottom-up pact forming around productivity targets is a necessary thing. At the moment, if productivity is discussed at high level, it becomes intractable. There's no recognition of the opposing constituencies' viewpoints. It's a hard structural discussion. We need to recognize common interests there and be more flexible and concerned about it, because otherwise our competitiveness will disappear. Fifthly, lack of adequate skills. As far as the manufacturing circles membership is concerned, this mostly manifests in terms of recruiting people who are in a position to learn, to be upskilled in a way that makes it possible for them to be productive and so on. These people are not evenly and in the right numbers being produced by our primary and secondary education system. So there's obviously an area where there needs to be cooperation between the private sector and the public sector, but also a significant focus required from government to even out what is being produced by our education system. And then secondly, a subdued consumer demand. I was in a meeting yesterday with a group of manufacturers in Ekurhuleni, and somebody asked, where is Proudly South Africa? We need that strong above the line buy local campaign. That entity is not producing it, has not been able to produce it for a while. We are doing what we can to assist the situation, but we believe that there are significant opportunities for quality oversight to be done in that respect, and to help promote that strong above the line buy local campaign to surface. We will certainly do from our side what we can to promote it. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much. It's Mr. Bezuidenhout, isn't it, Conrad? Now, we're not starting the discussion, but there are just three things I need to address. The one is just to recognize, which I didn't see earlier, the DDG of Trade and Industry, Mr. Garth Strachan, who I'm sure many of you are familiar with, either personally or through correspondence. I must say, not in 20 years have I come across what I'm going to address now. I have been a member of the public representative since 94, 10 years as Chair of Finance and Economic Affairs in Gauteng, and 5 years as the ETC Whip, Economic Transformation Whip, as well as the Whip of the Joint Budget Committee before we had appropriations. 5 years as Chair as Trade and Industry, and of course again this term becoming my sixth year. I regard myself as somebody who has a high regard for our constitution and good governance. I've written several books on it. And therefore I am surprised for the first time in 21 years I see a statement made in your presentation, Mr. Conrad, which bears no relation to what we are addressing, and that is colloquium on beneficiation, meaning value addition. We also became aware that beneficiation seems to be a peculiarly South African word, although I was told yesterday it's global. And I refer you to your page two of, I'm not too sure, could be your fourth slide. Page one is the cover, page two, page three, page four, in which you refer to promotion or promoting beneficiation, five high-level interventions. And on the second one, you make what I would regard is a wild and unjustified statement, and this is not the forum in which to have made it in the first place. Social dialogue realities mean business treatment as government opponent likely to remain the same. I'm only reading here, clearly there's a little typo, or intensify, particularly if Patel is allocated to DTI. I must assume that meant Minister Patel, who's currently the Minister of Economic, the Department of Economic Development. Now, I'm not going to entertain a dialogue unless you're going to apologise to this committee.
Ma'am, I actually apologised during the presentation. Unfortunately, I reworked the earlier presentation that was an internal presentation that didn't relate to beneficiation. That statement considered something completely different that's unrelated to beneficiation, so I apologize for that. I will send It's obviously an unfinalized version of the document that reached you. So I will send through the finalized version with the correct statement, which is reflected in the written document that I sent through. So please disregard that. It's not something that relates to this presentation. I apologize.
Accept the apology, but it makes me disturbed if that's what's happening in the private sector. But this is not time to debate it. I'm not chairing the discussion. That would be the Honourable Anton Elberts. In your absence, Honourable Elberts, we did indicate it was your birthday, and I hope we can all just wish you happy birthday. Right. Yeah, Whip is saying, where's the cake? other than that, as I did indicate to you, we know the Minister Davies regarded the manufacturing circle as playing a very important role. So I hope that you'll be instrumental in ensuring that we work together effectively in this regard. We now have Plastics South Africa. And is that Mr. Anton Harnikom? Right, Executive Director, I hope I'm correct here, Tabela Tapula, is that it? Is the down there, Manager Corporate Government Affairs. But all of that, I can't read the whole lot here, although we should effectively do that in future. Plastics is very important. You've got Ms. Annabee Pretorius, Mr. Douglas Green.
Chair, if you want to, I can quickly introduce the
people. Can you do that? Yes. Because I think that plastics is almost a forgotten sector here, and one that we're quite disturbed about. Please do so.
Chair, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for inviting us to this colloquium on beneficiation. Behind me is one of the factories and people that will make a presentation, is Richard Allen. He's from Acacia Health, manufacturing medical products from plastic. Next to him is Eric Baruch. He's the MD of Gold Sun, also manufacturing products, guarded furniture, etc. They will also make a presentation dealing specifically with polyprop material. Next to him is Annabee Pretorius. He's one of the few female experts in the polymer industry, a very knowledgeable person. And next to her is sitting Douglas Gregg. He's the from Taffy Manufacturing. He's also the Deputy Chair for Plastics SA Board. And next to him is Tabela Tapula. He's part of my management team, and he's involved with governance and public affairs. It's a big occasion for us, Chair, so we're happy to be here. May I proceed? The two companies that I've invited will probably go into a little bit more detail of what's happening on ground level in terms of beneficiation and the frustrations and the positive things that they experience. Chair, we're not here today to sit and moan, taking your lead from yesterday. We really want to come and make some practical proposals around how we can deal with beneficiation within the polymer sector, and how we can see plastic grow in future. Plastics is really part of everyday life. If we take plastics out of our normal living, it will just not be possible. So plastics is seen with cement and steel to be one of the economic drivers of industrialization and economic growth, and therefore a very important part of the future. We often refer to plastics as the material for the future. Chair, I also think it's a material of the present. If we don't have plastic today, living would not be possible. Our focus from Plastics SA, we are a Section 21 company. We represent the plastics industry, the whole value chain from material producers to importers of raw material, manufacturers or converters, the way we call them, machine suppliers, fabricators, retailers, we engage with them. Recycling is a very prominent part of the industry as well. and a part of the process. We do believe that the industry is it's a growth sector. We unfortunately see at the moment that the industry is under huge pressure due to a number of things. Cheap imports, for example, it's a big challenge for us. Our margins are under pressure. But we believe that with cooperation and dialogue, we can create a growth in the industry, double digits, it's possible, and obviously it will create jobs as well. So we're committed to that process. We're committed to an open dialogue, constructive dialogue with government around how we can achieve that. I'm going to skip a few slides just in the interest of time. Just maybe a little bit of overview of the industry. We roughly have 1,800 companies that operate within the industry. Many of these companies are small and medium enterprises. A lot of them are family-owned businesses as well. Interesting one, just as a side note, going back into the history, most of the plastics industry was created by artisans that arrived here from Europe and elsewhere, where with entrepreneurial skill, they saw the opportunities and start their own businesses. Like I said, many of these businesses are still in the families, it's still family-owned, but about 85% of these companies are small and medium enterprises. We convert roughly about 1.4 million tons raw material per annum into different products. We also recycle about 280,000 tons that's also been used as part of production. We employ more than 60,000 people. Chair, this is on a 60,000. We often have discussions with Stats SA around the number. They seem to have a little bit of a lesser number, but they tend to only look at the HS code 39, and there's a lot of plastics manufacturing outside HS 39 as well. They also only count, I think, permanent employees. There are some that are on contract basis as well. We, of that 1.4 million tons that we convert per annum, roughly 55% is going into packaging, so it's in terms of food contact and food protection. We contribute to the GDP around 50 billion rand per annum post-conversion. That roughly contributes about 1.6 to the GDP of South Africa. It's about 14.2% in terms of manufacturing that plastics is contributing. It should be noted that our industry is it's big in terms of the Africa content, but our markets are fairly small. We're far from the world markets. A lot of the plastic products is difficult to ship. It is, if you take a bottle, if the bottle is empty, it's a lot of air that you transport. The weight, the benefit of plastics, it's lightweight. So in terms of transport, very often it's more volume than weight that you need to ship, and in terms of exports and things, that's a big challenge for us, and I'll come back to that a little bit later on. Part of the focus is really looking into Africa in terms of exports, where it's more infrastructure, road that we can use that will probably make it more meaningful. It's important to note also that plastics worldwide, and it's been confirmed recently by a study in Italy, is the multiplier in terms of economic growth. If I look at just economic growth, indications are that plastics is contributing 2.7%, or the multiplier is 2.7. So for every 1 rand you spend in plastics manufacturing, downstream will lead to 2.7 rand investment. In terms of employment, for every one person you employ in a plastics manufacturing, it would lead to 3.5 times in terms of downstream. So it does add in terms of employment on the downstream side. Jim, maybe just a little bit more around the conversion. Just maybe worldwide, roughly 288 million tons are converted per annum. Only 7% of that is happening in the Middle East and in Africa. So it's a very small percent of world production. We also very often plastics is seen to be a huge, in a negative view in terms of crude oil, and that we use a lot of fossil fuel. Worldwide, less than 4% of crude oil is used for the manufacturing of plastics, and very often it's a byproduct as well. In the past, we flared these sort of things. So, by just changing raw material and things, it's not going to necessarily give us more oil for energy in the future. Over the last 10 years, if one look at these graphs, and this is purely looking at the tonnage converted, we've seen probably close to a 30% growth over the last 30 years. We've seen a few negative growth areas just after 2008 in terms of the world economic crisis. Plastics have dropped in 2009. We also seen just after the world soccer event that we had, there's been a dip slight with just after 2010 as well. If one look at consumption, plastics is growing. Industry in South Africa is growing. We also, even irrespective of the fact that there's a lot of lightweighting taking place, so we reduce the wall thickness and things of bottles and things like that to make it lighter, we're still producing more. In terms of margins, we are under huge pressure. Like I mentioned, imports, there's some other factors that is putting the industry under a lot of pressure. If I just look at where is the materials being used in South Africa, different market sectors. As I mentioned, 55% is going into packaging. Compare that with international standards. In Europe, for example, packaging is around 35 to 39%. So one can argue that packaging is very well developed in South Africa. Chair, another way of looking at it is that maybe the other sectors are not that well developed and not growing the way they should, and therefore packaging seem to be a much bigger percentage of this. But if one look at construction, for example, building and construction, we've seen a growth over the last couple of years in that specific sector. We believe we can still see more growth there. Specifically, if one starts looking at the SIP programs, there's a lot of, one don't think in building a road you need plastics, but there are plastics involved, and something that is part of beneficiation, we need to start thinking how do we integrate that with these sort of activities. Some of the other areas are much smaller, but one also has to look not just at the volume, but also the value add of these sort of processes. And I think that's important to note that going forward, where are the value add in terms of what we're doing. If one look at the trade balance for plastic products, it's a little bit of a sad story. Our exports is fairly constant, it's not growing. Our imports, one can see a huge insurge and a huge increase in terms of imports. There's probably a number of reasons for this. Currently we're sitting around 10 billion rand shortfall. And if we think in terms of the GDP of 50 million rand, if one can replace those imports with locally produced material or locally produced products, that will add 20% to our GDP immediately, and it will create more jobs. And one has to look at why the increase and how do we counter those sort of activities. Chair, as part of the activities of Plastics SA and what we're doing is we realize that we have a big need for skills, we have a big need for testing, and I think it's been raised yesterday as well in the discussions, that we don't have testing facilities where we can test product for export purposes, and we believe that we've lost the innovation, the entrepreneurship within the industry. A couple of years back we had creepy crawlies and all these sort of things that take the world, and we've lost those sort of initiatives. And as part of bringing that back, we've applied through the MSEP for Skills Development and Innovation Cluster. We are still in discussion with the department around it. We have not received approval for that yet. But for example, the intention is to use the same equipment that we train to also for testing and research purposes, and also so it's utilizing the same equipment for multi-purpose. Intention is also to train 120 artisans in machine setting, which is one of the key skills within the plastics industry. We unfortunately one of those that submitted it prior, beginning of the year. Subsequently in April, the criteria have changed, and being a industry body, we now suddenly doesn't qualify for that anymore, and therefore this whole process has been put on us, and we still await feedback. The MCIP. And then my last slide, Chair, is really attempt to make it a little bit more practical what's been discussed the last 2 days. And for the academics, they will probably, their hair will stand upright if they look at this. I'm trying to be practical. I try to simplify something that's very complex. And really what we're saying is that beneficiation is not going to work if we don't integrate it, if we don't look at all the various aspects and bring it together. We keep on hearing that the raw material cost is too high of plastics and that we should reduce it, but that on its own is not going to have any impact. Unless we change the whole scope, everything that relates to a specific product or sector, we're not going to achieve anything at the end of the day. So Chair, this is not really trying to question your integrity or your ability to deal with complex things, but I'm a practical person, and I will use the example just quickly to try and illustrate what I mean by this specific graph. And I really want to focus on the middle two circles. If I take, we very often say plastics is a priority sector, but it's so broad. We deal with so many different processes, different material. Like I said, plastic is really part of every subsector. It's cross-cutting into everything. And that therefore it makes it very difficult. Even if we export, we not export bumpers, we export a car. And very often we export polymers and plastic products, but we don't count it as such. So this is the attempt really to on a practical level say how do we need to do it, and it by no means is this a complete process. This is just the attention to illustrate what I'm meaning by that. Let's say we take a product just for a simple example. The manufacturing of syringes is a big thing. There's some research done by DTI at the moment, and the attempt is to bring syringes, the manufacturing of syringes, back into South Africa. We probably use billions per annum. We had four companies in the last 4 years that have produced syringes. None of those companies exist at the current moment, and the question is why? What happened? So let's say we want to bring syringes back into the country. So how will we benefit then through the beneficiation process? How do we integrate it so that we can create jobs, that we can create value, and that we can grow the business? And it really starts at the policy level. There needs to be policy decisions. We need strong leadership around this, as has been mentioned before. We need probably a political directive to say we need in future to produce syringes in South Africa. We don't want to import that anymore. That needs to flow through to regulations and all the various programs that government is utilizing in terms of this. So in terms of preferential procurement, the Department of Health cannot procure syringes outside those that's been locally produced. We cannot look at SIPs if, okay, syringes is probably not relevant to SIPs, but I think the context remains. If one look at trade, we are regularly in contact with, in discussions with NEDLAG on trade agreements. Every 5 years we need to review tariffs, and the point is that very often that becomes a mechanical process. We need to reduce tariffs from 15 to 10 to 0%, and when we object and say it's critical, we need to protect it, we say, well, your numbers, we can only allow 15%, we need to reduce the rest of the tariffs. That doesn't help the industry in terms of growth and downstream beneficiation. So in terms of trade, if we say syringes is important, then that trade, that tariff, maybe we go back to the bound rate, maybe we look at negotiations around that it doesn't take place in the future. What's the standards? Very often standards are used as a non-tariff barrier as well. In South Africa, our borders are open. We do not control a lot of the stuff coming in, very often sub-quality. So let's look at standards. Let's develop things specifically then to syringes so that we protect the local producers as well. Labor is a big issue. Currently we negotiate wages, for example, on acetyl metal and the metal side. Very often, for the last 4 years, we try to have a separate bargaining council for plastics where we can negotiate wages and things relevant to the industry and not to another industry. Exports, if we produce syringes in South Africa, what is the opportunity to export it into Southern Africa or into Sub-Sahara Africa? As I said earlier, we're too far from international markets. Very often it's not tradable commodities because of the weight and the volumes that we export. So what's the support that we can get then from TISA and those people to help us to take syringes back into Africa and therefore strengthen what's happening in the local market? Recycling, one will say, well, what has that got to do with beneficiation? I think it's a critical part. But when one look at products like a syringes, design it with the focus of recycling at the end as well. So if you use a syringe, what's the end? What do you do with a syringe afterwards? What's the material that you use? Can it go back into a proper recycling process so that you can recover the calorific value of the material and reuse it into another product? Same with testing in the facilities. We need to do more research. We need to do tests. If we export, we need to comply very often with certain certification criteria. Currently in South Africa, if you want to export, we often ship containers to the country. They do the test wherever they need to do it. And that is a long delay in terms of getting certification to export our products. It's not helping us locally. The same with research development, logistics, which I'm going quickly through it. Infrastructure is very often a problem. It's cheaper to export a product from Hong Kong to the Durban harbor than to transport it from Durban to Johannesburg. It's more expensive to transport products from South Africa to up in Africa than to China. And the question is why? What is the reason behind it? And how do we deal with that? So what we're arguing is that we need to sit down and look at all of these things and say, how does it impact syringes, for example, and how do we change policies and structures and programs that it address the right things? Electricity, for example, is another example of infrastructure. We say it's high cost, but in plastics it's very often the unreliable supply of electricity. Because we compare it to light industries, yesterday's discussion, but light industries, if the power is coming up, you can switch on the machine and you can carry on producing. In plastics, if the material have got cold in the barrels, you have to remove the barrel, you have to clean the screws. It's a day plus delay that you have with a lot of waste. So it's not just that simple comparison that one has to do at the end of the day. So what's the agreement? There are certain municipalities that's very, very expensive in terms of electricity pricing, different to others. And how do one enter then into agreement with that municipality on a specific product or subsector? The question is around the special economic zones as well. Unintended consequences could be that you set up companies that support it, that compete with existing companies. So one look at beneficiation and say, but if we buy syringes, you probably need a bag, a packaging that can go around it. Who can manufacture that? And if there nobody here, then maybe that is part of the IDC development, that you link the things in the value chain that will make sense at the end of the day. Technology, we sit with fairly old equipment. We have sometimes problems with investments due to criteria that specifically SMEs cannot always comply with. So indirectly we see more and more companies closing down. There's a few big ones coming in, and most of them are funded by IDC or even with government support. So one need to look at incentives, investments, and how does it support the process. We need to look at technology and see how we improve our equipment, our efficiencies. We very often don't replace equipment quickly enough, in that order, we're not competitive. We can't produce the quantities. But very often the quantities of the new machine is more than our market size. So we need to look at exports and how do we support that as well. Chair, I think in a nutshell, that's really, it's not complete. I think this is just an attempt to say, but if one take one product or one subsector, one has to think through everything and say, how does it link and how do you make that happen? For example, being cross-cutting around other economic sectors as well is that if one take labor, a strike in mining, a strike in the automotive, a strike in any of the other sectors has an impact on the plastics industry. And therefore, it puts further pressure in terms of our margins. In terms of time, I think I would like to stop there.
Something to alert you, but this is not conducive to that. Okay, but that was really very interesting, and certainly I learned a lot of valuable things about the plastics industry, especially the need for reliable energy. I'm sure it applies to many others. Right, thank you very much then. And we then move on, Mr. Harnacombe, we're moving on then to Acacia Healthcare. Clearly nothing to do with Acacia Park. just as well. And Mr. Richard Allen. Richard Allen. We're giving two timelines, but this is a little hard. I'm going to work on the where I can stop people.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. And thanks for the opportunity to represent the medical industry when it comes to manufacturing of plastic medical devices. I just want to give you a brief history of who we are and what we do. Acacia Healthcare is a direct descendant of Tebe Investments and Tebe Medical. It was their aim in those days to buy out certain medical companies that manufacture locally and empower the local communities. Acacia Healthcare now comprises of four different divisions. The pharma division, we manufacture pharmaceuticals, as well as a consumer division, a surgical division, and what I represent is a medical division. In South Africa. We consider ourselves a proudly South African company, and we have branches in most areas in South Africa, and two main head offices in South Africa, one being in Isando, Johannesburg, where our pharmaceutical base is. They manufacture all our pharmaceuticals there. We do all our warehousing and office space there. And then in Cape Town and Durbanville Hills, we have our huge manufacturing plant where we manufacture all of our medical devices. We also do our warehousing and have another satellite warehouse, as well as all our offices are based in Cape Town itself. Our vision is pretty simple. We strive to offer a quality medical product at a reasonable price, and most importantly, when it comes to the medical industry requisite, on-time deliveries and an outstanding service to our customers. What we do basically is we manufacture and distribute. We also distribution center. We have our sales force marketing team, and we do everything in-house in South Africa. We don't deal with many wholesalers, although we do sell to some resellers in the industry. Our clients basically include the private and state sector hospitals, our private still being one of our biggest markets, our three major private hospital groups. We also supply to end users, private practitioners, pharmacies, and as I said before, some of our wholesalers as well. And we service by quite a few of our sales force and also have a telesales infrastructure. Our turnover is about 230 million rands per annum. At present in our manufacturing facility, we have between 130 and 150 manufacturing personnel. This fluctuates on the amount of contracts that we gain both in the private sector and the government sector. We have a couple of that, as you can see, about 20 agency staff that we bring in when necessary. At one point we were over the 200 mark, but the way the industry has been going recently for us, we've had to downscale a little bit. And then we have a sales force of about 25 representatives in the country. In our manufacturing processes, from raw material that comes into our building, it enters as in its pellet form in the plastic raw materials to exit our building as a finished product, sterilized in some cases, and then packaged and ready for hospital use. Our processes include extruding. We have very specialized extruding machines which can also extrude X-ray detectable lines in our medical products for indwelling catheters, injection molding and blow molding of products. And then our downline processes include the cutting, welding, printing, assembling, all the different processes needed to make that final product. And then the packaging is also one of the biggest parts, because we have to specialize packaging, and some cases double packaging for the medical industry. We also have one of the biggest ETO ethylene oxide sterilizing plants in South Africa, with over 60 square meters of sterilizing space, as well as a huge warehouse. Our cleaning facility is over 100 square meters of floor space, and we house all of our extruding and manufacturing equipment within that space as required as an ISO standard for medical device manufacturing. We're known by our other divisions as the Tupperware business. So 65% of our business is Tupperware, meaning plastics and PVCs, and 35% is medical textiles. We do over 1,200 different lines of products, 40% of which are locally manufactured. It used to be a lot more than that, but we'll delve on that a little bit later. 20% locally packaged, meaning that we bring in some of the textiles, medical textiles, and we package them in accordance with hospital requirements in plastic packaging, etc. 40% of our imported other products we import, basically, which was previously, as I said, about a 50-30 split before, which we'd like to revert back to if possible one of these fine days. Just a few of our products. We manufacture surgical, respiratory, and what we call a general medical category of products. I've just given you a sample of one of our oxygen masks for devices, which I'll go into a little bit more detail about. This product is 100% manufactured in South Africa and manufactured in our plant in Cape Town. It requires 17 different processes to get the final product and get it out to ultimately hospital use. Then we do a whole lot of wound drains, surgical drains, thoracic drains, and other general medical products. But for all intents and purposes, with the oxygen mask, I'll just give you a quick breakdown of our costs involved in manufacturing a plastic and PVC product like that. It combines both polyprop as well as the PVC compounds. So in the pie chart there, you can see about 78% of it is material costs. Unfortunately, we lack the skills in South Africa to do the proper testing for medical grade PVCs, and that we haven't got a test facility to test for the heavy metals and other requirements required by ISO standards. So we have to import most of our PVCs, not all of them, only the PVCs that we use for medical use. So that being said, our costs are quite high on our raw materials. 16% is labor, and the other portion is just packaging and consumables that we use to manufacture them. Just to show you here what our pressures are, and I'll go into the pressures into a lot more detail. Our cost of a mask, in this case that mask sitting over there, is R5.62, excluding VAT. This also excludes delivery costs, which equate to about 9% of our sales cost, and then an additional 29%, which is for our business costs, so our admin fees, marketing fees, that type of thing. And then in a recent Western Province DRH tender, which we submitted these products to, the winning award went at R5.75, including VAT. So our costs are in at about R7, R7.50, if you equate all our costs together. So we have to sell in between R8 and R9, which unfortunately is nowhere near the winning tender price. And these are the type of things we need to look at and try and find out where we're going wrong and how we can rectify this. As Anton said, that the material costs don't equate too much, but if we can at least bring it locally and get those testing done locally, we can reduce those manufacturing costs. And then, of course, everything is volume driven. If you don't have the volumes, we can't bring those costs down. So our pressures, going into a bit more depth, are the cheap imports. We battle every day with cheap imports. We have to ultimately bring in our own cheap imports because we can't compete anymore in the medical industry. We've lost a lot of our line items to importing products ourselves and having to retrench staff and fine-tune our inner processes to get our costings lower. Our expenses of business running costs are extremely high. And as I said, the lack of volume sales is the big problem, where we can't guarantee volume, we can't manufacture our molds in accordance to volume. At the moment, we push out 4 masks per mold shot, as opposed to being able to do 20 at a time if we had the volumes and reducing the costs. And then our regulatory expenses, I mean, our whole facility is ISO accredited. And then we also have to comply in most instances to the SABS standards as well when it comes to government tenders. So in the government sector, from my understanding, there is no preference whatsoever for local manufacture in the medical device industry, unlike other industries like food and textiles. We the only preference you get is for the black empowerment system as well as and price. That's all it's based on. They don't look at your facility or financial background. We've never had an inspection from the State Tender Board to come look at our facility and see exactly what we do compared to other smaller companies, what you call little backstreet companies that just do direct imports and send straight out to end user and have no structure at all. Our SSBS standards in most cases are expected from for medical devices, which are extremely expensive. The other day we were trying to enter a tender for medical syringes and needles, and I mean the prices are exorbitant. They're wanting R15,000 per needle, so you have to have 20 different sizes of needles, and if you work out the volumes, especially being on a safety needle, that doesn't even equate to the profit you'd make. It wouldn't even cover your expenses in SABS testing and getting the product out to market. And then we also have an issue where there is a bit of a lack of tender compliance in most regions. In some cases where we do receive a tender or be awarded a tender, the compliance is virtually zero. Different regions are better in that case. And you also have to have a huge marketing force to drive that thing, which is also at huge expense. Our private sector is quite different in that it's driven mainly by our major medical insurance companies who all have medical aids. And as you know, they restrict what you can use and where you can use it as well. And that you all have to have gap cover nowadays because a medical aid doesn't cover what you the services you get in a hospital. And that's because they're benchmarking pricing when it comes to what they're going to recover, the recoverability of a product and what they will pay for. So they will take a product that's one of the cheapest products, so this is the price that we're prepared to pay. We won't be prepared to pay anything more than that, so anything over and above that you need to have gap cover for. And it's the same with surgeons and the procedures that you have within the hospitals that you have to have compensation for. It's also a bit of a symbiotic relationship with the hospitals, in that if a hospital complies with their pricing standards, they then get a preferential listing from the medical aids, and that they will say, you can now, if you're on such and such a plan, you now have to go to this list of hospitals because it's preferred. Preferred rating type of system, which does nothing for us because we still can't get our product put it out to market. So it's a bit of a catch-22 where we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and we end up supplying non-formulary-based products, especially in the government, where people can't supply because they've gone in too aggressively and their prices are unsustainable. And eventually they default on the tenders, and then we get the buyouts through a trade world system or mini contract system, and that's pretty much how we do our businesses. Just on the sad note, these are a list of the products that we recently, in the last 2 years, have lost to. These were all locally manufactured in our Cape Town based plant, which we now import directly from the East, in most cases, as well as some European countries, just mainly due to the pricing issues. It's a price war out there, and we're really battling with it. So we're looking at some way of having a preferential system, for, especially in the medical industry, to get us back into the market. And once the volumes are up there and we're driven by volumes, we can then reduce our costs as well, but we're not getting the chance to do that. Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chairperson.
No, thank you very much indeed. And one certainly learns a few more things about the health environment. That was Mr. Richard Allen, followed by your colleague, Mr. Eric Barak, Managing Director of Gold Sun. Gold Sun. Right. Have you got colleagues with you?
Excuse me?
Have you got colleagues with you to support?
No.
Brave man, go ahead. Members, just while we're waiting there, a couple of adjustments. Some of you may not have been here just to start. We did start off with someone else, Vedusa, the manufacturing circle and the rest. And we started 20 minutes late, so that really, we're going to have Gold Sun Industries, and after that we're going into tea, and then we're going to have the discussion chaired by the Honourable Advocate Alberts. Thank you very much then, Mr. Barak.
Thanks for the opportunity. Gold Sun Industry is an injection moulding company based in Atlantis, Cape Town. Atlantis is an area of high unemployment. We've located ourselves there 20 years ago, and we try and support the local community and create employment there. We specialize in medium to large injection molded products. We are SMME that is family owned. I'm a second generation of the business. The raw material we utilize in our production is mainly polyprop, which mainly is sourced from Sasol in Secunda. We also utilize recycled raw materials in recent years. We have sales offices in Cape Town, Johannesburg and Durban. We presented in majority of South Africa via agents in neighboring countries to try and get a footprint with our products in South Africa and neighboring countries. Customers are generally the major retailers, independents, people like Game, ShopRite, Pick and Pay, etc. Plastic stores that have sprung up in the last few years all over the show. Challenges we have there with obviously a lot of imported products that are coming into the country. And then 30% of what we produce is going mainly into neighboring African countries. So it's not only the South African company. This is a section from our factory. You can see the injection molding machine. I just brought some illustrations so you can get a sense of what we do. This is production of some plastic chairs that you've seen on the on the board there. We produced over a million plastic chairs per annum, which makes us one of the serious players in the market in the industry. We produce outdoor patio, office and kids furniture. We produce mainly preschool, outdoor toys, housewares, storage solutions from crates to storage for home and office. We've also had some contracts in the past where we supplied companies like Tedelix that have closed down their facilities in Atlantis with TV covers and TV components for production for local production. They've been replaced by Hisense that is getting quite high, as I believe, government support and funding. I wanted to show some of the stages of manufacturing of what actually happens in our factory. We bring in raw materials that come in pallet form, so in little beads. We then blend these raw materials together with additives and colorants to give the product that you saw in the previous presentation the right properties and the right colors. Those are mostly sourced in South Africa, even though I know that some of the ingredients are imported into South Africa. We then injection mold the product. That's the automated part of it. This is just an illustration of an injection molding machine. You can see on the top there's a silo where the raw material will come in. Then there's a barrel that's heated up to form the pellets and melt them into liquid, and then injected into the mold, which is the green part in between the platens and the machine. Typically, the modern equipment is computerized, so not all of our machinery is computerized, but we are trying to get everything to be computerized. This gives you a sense of our production costs. As you can see, the main component of what we produce is the raw material part. Our type of consumer products are high volume, low margin lines. So raw material is a very big part of the cost of what we're producing. You can see the other figures. Labor is also not a small part, but it's not the main component of our production costs. So it's more related to the raw material, which we source at the moment mainly locally. And then obviously you've got electricity, which forms about 7% of our costs. And then, as Anton Anikom has mentioned, we have the challenges of the rising cost of electricity, the stability of supply, which I'll touch in a moment on. This is just a brief illustration of how we as a company contribute towards beneficiation in South Africa. One of our division also produces plastic that comes with aluminium or stainless steel chairs. So we buy in also metal parts into our process. We buy the extruded profiles, we cut them up, then we machine them, and then we fit them into our product. So it's also supporting non-plastic industry in other industries in our country. We have an assembly because the injection molding machine basically produces components, sometimes the finished product which comes to a complete chair, but a lot of times lots of different components that have to be assembled together. And that's another way we provide employment, by assembly plants that put the components together and to bring them to a final product. We use a lot of, because we supply to the retailers, we supply on a national basis, we have to get goods into their stores, so we have to support transporters, people that warehouse goods for us, and distribute goods for us to the stores, so there's a knock-on effect in terms of our plastic industry into other transport and warehousing industry. We make use of various electrical and mechanical contractors for our ongoing operation outside our company, for new plant and for maintenance. And we also outsource production of our smaller components to other smaller type of plastic companies where they would produce the type of smaller components that we are not involved in, and thereby providing also further employment to their in their factories. What our business needs really is the machinery and auxiliary equipment to be able to produce. And this is the injection molding machines that I've showed you the illustration. There's all sorts of other auxiliary equipment like cooling facilities, mixing facilities that are necessary in the process. A big part of our capital investment is also the molds or tooling that is required to produce the product. The molds are product specific, so a mold can only basically make one product. You can't change a mold once it's made that product. And if the product is not successful, then basically you've got nothing to do with that mold. So it's very risky because in our market, the consumption from that mold is not guaranteed, so we have to make investments into molds after research and hope that they will pay off. We need obviously factory building and warehouses with high electricity availability. We need skilled plastic technologists and engineers in our process so they can drive our factory. We need tool makers to be able to maintain our molds and to fix and create them. And then we need semi-skilled labor. We also employ sales and admin staff as a company that is distributing all over South Africa and neighboring countries. Some of the challenges or the factors that we view as something that could improve the success of our company. I mentioned here local supply and cost price of raw materials. Sasol Polymer is a local manufacturer, producer of product, of raw material for us. And we as a company feel that the support of the market is limited in terms of the supply that we can be guaranteed of. In terms of pricing, which is with the import parity policy, is not too different from what we can import from other markets. And then in terms of pricing stability, the import parity also dictates that as prices and US dollar exchange rates change, the prices is changed as well. So it's quoted on a monthly basis where the cost of a company like Sasol's are not changing. So this is one challenge that we have. I mentioned electricity. We have high costs for the consumption. Our machinery consumes a lot of electricity. We are trying to get new equipment that is more efficient, which I will touch on a bit later, to get new capacity of electricity. Besides the consumption cost of electricity, you have to pay availability costs, which are very high in our case, the city of Cape Town or Eskom, to be able to expand our business. So it's a prohibitive condition that is difficult to overcome. As I mentioned about we have availability of limited availability of semi-skilled and skilled labor. The Cape Town University of Technology have closed in Cape Town, so there's no new skills coming in Cape Town in terms of plastic into the market. What the Plastic South Africa is providing is training, so we can send our staff there, but there's no creation of new artisan or new expertise that are coming. So we have to actually try, it's all about training of our old people, which we try and do, but also it would be better for the industry if there was also new entrance of skills into the market. Labor productivity is an issue for us as well, but not a major one. And as I said, there's not enough artisans in the industry. In terms of export promotion, I mentioned that 30% of our business is the export, mainly into the African countries. We have developed a few products that we are now trying to get into European, American, Australian markets, and which I'll touch on the import replacement side in a moment's time. We have a high product testing costs. So for us to have had those product tested, we've had to send those samples overseas. Our products are big. There's a high cost to do that. The testing costs are very high. There is no product facility testing in our country to be able to get those certifications that we have to send to Hong Kong or to Germany or to other places. Those facilities don't exist in our country. So if a policy in that direction would be created, it would be very good for us. Obviously, if we are able to export into those markets, we believe that the scope for us is much bigger in terms of export than what we're doing currently, and it will create jobs. Sasol does subsidize exports in a limited way. As a percentage, as the prices have increased, it's become less and less as a percentage of the cost price of the raw material. If Sasol could assist in terms of increasing subsidy for this type of export promotion. And then I don't know if, I know that in some countries also the government gives some subsidies towards export, if that's a policy that the government needs to decide on. DTI incentives for the capital investment. I mentioned that we're trying to replace older equipment. We were introduced last year to MSEP, which was introduced last year to the industry to be able to try and claim and renew the equipment and to become more competitive. In my case, we applied for this incentive in October last year. Until today, I don't have an answer from DTI whether my application has been approved or it has not actually gone to hearing 10 months later. So there's that is a problem. There's uncertainty in terms of what we can do, in terms of how the government can support us in creating new capacities and renewing our equipment. The requirements for the MSAP, since we applied a year ago, I believe have been changed twice, in April and then again in July. They want us to apply those criteria to our company that applied 10 months ago. I'm not sure how that's going to work. We've tried to make changes to our application, and I hope that it will be successful. And I don't know if there's any other schemes that will be more specific to our industry, to people like us, which are, we are trying to transform our business. We have been looking, for example, in our factory for an operations manager, for a factory manager, for a logistical manager. On the logistical side, we found the candidates. On the technical side, whether it was white or black, there's no skills available. You know, so it's very difficult for a business for us like ourselves to transform itself in terms of management structure, to become more BE compliant when the skills that are there there's no skills around. As I said, it doesn't matter white or black. In terms of import replacement policy, one of our strategies has been to, because as I mentioned, the mold costs are very high and it's quite risky, you know, to invest in tooling and then it can fail. So what we try to do, and this is what we did with our preschool toys that we were doing, we brought in some imported products, we tested the market, we learned how the market works, and then we went and invested in our own tooling, which we improved on the products that we imported, and those are the products that I'm talking about. It's for supplying of the local market, so it's replacing the import of what was there, and also for export into the various other markets in the world. We believe that we have products which are world class. It's very difficult to go through the testing. We have the challenges as well of in terms of import and export. You know, the costs of transportation, of infrastructure. You know, for us, we sent a container for one of our customers to Malaysia. The cost of that container to Malaysia was less than it cost me to transport from Cape Town to goods to George. So we have structural problem in terms of transportation of goods. Access to capital, we have found that applying to people like the IEC is a very long process, and it's something that when we have a project on the agenda, by the time that the IDC is going to approve it, maybe that project should be taken off the agenda. So it's a very long process to get financing from governments. Another challenge is that we have in our industry, in our business rather, and I think it's for other businesses in South Africa in our position, is the tool-making facility. For our type of tooling, of larger type of products, there's no facilities in this country, there's not enough skills in this country to produce these good tools. So we have to go to other countries and make the tools and provide employment there, where there's no tool-making facilities in this country, whether for creation of new tools or for maintenance of tools. So I think that's something that the government needs to encourage towards the industry, the tool-making facilities. We design products from the conception to the final production and marketing of the products. We find that there's limited skills and facility, as I said, to do that. We often have to go overseas to be able to develop products, to manufacture the molds for the product. So that's something that we would like to try and find a solution to. Tariff protection on finished products. I mentioned that some of our customers are the big retailers, your Games, your ShopRites, your Pick and Pays. We're competing against import by traders and from our customers. So we don't support heavily protected industry, but we don't think that we have a level playing field.
You need to come to a close.
I'm finishing. High cost of local, regional and product distribution, which I mentioned, with the high cost of distribution. And in summary, basically, I think besides the raw material challenges that we face, I think government can do, in terms of policies and incentive, a lot for our industry to be able to improve what we're all trying to get to provide more employment, less imports, more exports, and so forth. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barak. And we certainly took cognizance of the different issues there. Perhaps there will be one or two questions, especially as there were certain points that have been made that need some clarification. This is really just to indicate what we're doing right now. It's just after 11. We're actually going to take our tea break right now until... It's 11:05 until 11:20, and then we're going to have a discussion, and all those who made a presentation should sit here where they came earlier so that members of the committee can engage, and the discussion will be chaired by Advocate Anton Alberts. We'd certainly like to start that discussion no later than 11:25. Thank you very much.